So we're going to open up to Bamidbar Perek Lamed Vav. Now we're going to look at Rashi on Sukim Beis and Gimel. If you'll take a look at the end of Parshas Masai, which is really at the end of Chumash Bamidbar, the Torah goes through the story of divvying up the land amongst the people of Israel, and specifically in our case, amongst the Benos Slavchot. That begins in Perek Lamed Vav. And you'll see as we go along throughout that Perek that the Torah sort of reaches its crescendo almost at the very end of Chumash Bamidbar and Pasuk Yud Aleph. Now, does anybody know by chance, I'm just testing your general knowledge, how many daughters there were?
Five.
They came five. Excellent. And who is the oldest?
That's a trick question.
No, it's not a trick question. The next question I ask will be a trick question. But not this one.
Milcha?
Malcha, right. Machlo. Not, yeah.
Some significance?
Now that's significant. I'll tell you why. Because what you have to do is you have to keep a finger on Pasuk Yud Aleph in Perek Lamed Vav. Yeah. Okay? And then what you have to do is you have to turn back a few chapters before, and we're going to look now in Parshas Pinchas in Perek Chavav. Okay then, so we're in Perek Chavav. This is the original story of the Bnos Slavchad, and you can look in Pasuk Lamed Gimel, and who's the first on the list? In Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Perek Chavav.
So the Yisachar, Chalat family, Purat.
Machla. Okay, so you see, that. So that question, David, was not a trick question. Because the Torah is very consistent and Machla comes first. You'll see this again in Perek Chav Zayin.
You want a world change, Rabbi.
Yeah, it's going to change in just a second, but so far I want to get the easy case out of the way, and that's Machla. And you'll see in Perek Chav Zayin, Pasuk Aleph, and who's first on the list again? Machla, correct? So we have that? So far, so good. Now, let's just see what we have here. So in Perek Chavav, Pasuk Lamed Gimel, and in Perek Chav Zayin, Pasuk Aleph, and here at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, Perek Lamed Vav, in all three cases, Machlo comes first. Now, I want to take a little bit of your time to see who comes second, third, fourth, and fifth in Parshas Pinchas. So in Parshas Pinchas, again, once again, we're looking at Perek Chavav. Okay, so try not to lose your place. Pasuk Lamed Gimel. And we've got Noah, Chagla, Milcah, and Tirza. You have that? And that is consistent in Perek Chav Zayin, Pasuk Aleph, because after Machla comes, you guessed it, Noah, Chagla, Milcah, and Tirza. So let's just say that we have a unified front in Parshas Pinchas. Don't lose the place because that's one chart. Now we look in Parshas Masai at the end of Chumash Bamidbar. And here's my trick question to you, David.
Yes, I'm ready for it, Rob.
Yeah, but in this case, you're going to know the answer because you know I'm trying to trick you, so you know the answer. Who's number two on the list? Tirza is number two on the list. Wait a minute, didn't we just say that Noah was number two on the list?
Yeah.
Now let's just do a comparison here. If we look in Parshas Pinchas, both in Perek Chavav and in Perek Chav Zayin, after Machla, we have Noah. She's number two. In contrast, when we look in Masai, where is Noah? What number is she now?
Number five.
Wow, she really got degraded, demoted from number two to number five. And if you're raising daughters, you know, this could be a problem.
My 2-year-old daughter is Noah.
Noah.
I did the Bar Torah subject.
Oh, so you already know this.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
From
Kai. Okay. Hopefully we'll add something, David, to what you know. Okay? Because for me this is all new. Noah in Parshas Pinchas is number 2. Noah in Parshas Masai is number 5. Okay, now let's look at who's number 2 in Parshas Masai at the end of Bamidbar. Tirzah, correct? And who's number and where is Tirzah in Parshas Pinchas? She's number, don't all answer at once.
She's the last one.
Number 5. Okay. The last one equals number 5. But you're right. Okay, she's the last one. Okay, no, your answer is even better than mine, because the numbers are not so critical here. Just who comes first and last. So let's just summarize. Machla is always consistently number 1. Less mind the Pollock, you know, and this is no Machlokas. The question is who should come after Machla? Now, keep in mind, Chagla and Milka always remain numbers 3 and 4. Yeah. That never changes.
Yeah.
So the only change, which Rashi is going to make a big deal about here, is number 2.
Yeah.
Or shall we say numbers 2 and 5. That would be a better way of saying it. In other words, in Parshas Pinchas, the Torah is consistent and twice tells us that number 2 is Noah and number 5 is Tirzah. Whereas in Parshas Masai, Tirzah is going to be number 2 instead of being number 5. She got jacked up. But Noah got demoted. Am I right? Because Noah is now number 5. And David, you're not going to tell that to Noah, but
it's alright. It's just because she's the youngest.
Ah, she's the youngest. So again, that's interesting. Okay, that's pretty good. I'm glad Noah's the youngest, but I hope that maybe, you know, she won't always be the youngest. You know, that's my bracha to you.
From quite or quality of the woman.
Okay, so the question is, are we dealing with quality or are we dealing with what?
Frumkeit.
Well, no, let's put quality and frumkeit together, because we like frumkeit as a quality. But what would be the other possible way of ordering names?
Age.
Age. Okay, good. So this is very good. So let's see whether we can find out if Noah is second in line, age-wise, or if Chagla is Tirzah is next in line, age-wise. Okay, that's what we want to figure out. But more fundamentally, what we want to do is try to find some reconciliation of why does the Torah have two different orders or two different sequences or systems. That's what we really want to work on. Okay, then. Just out of curiosity, David, you have a Noah. Do you have a Tirzah as well?
No.
That's too bad. Because if you had a Tirzah, you'd be very excited about what we want to say.
But you just gave them a brocha, so can you read the next one?
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you may want a boy. But okay, if it's a girl, then let it be Tirzah. Okay.
She was born in this Parsha, that's why. Well, she was born in Parsha Pinchas.
Okay.
It was a nice little Devar Torah.
Okay. So you should know, if Noah is born in Parsha Pinchas, and she's second online, that's good. That's very good. But the heroine of today's Shia is really going to be
Machla.
Just 1 second. It's going to be Tirzah. Okay, just 1 second. Let me just get my head on straight. Is with Tirzah's last here and here? Yeah, Tirzah is going to be Tirzah. It would take me about 15 minutes to go over this. I apologize, yeah. But if you just follow the text, you'll catch up. Okay, now, Rabosai, let's move on because I know the clock is ticking. Now, who do we like more? The one on top or the one on the bottom? Now, I don't know. You know, everyone's different. But when I was a sports fan, you know, again, I don't know. Excellent.
Oh.
I like the underdog. This caused a lot of friction between me and my best friend. I'll tell you a little about American baseball. In New York City, there was a team called the New York Yankees. And then, decades and decades later, when I was a youth, they opened up another New York team. See, in baseball, there's what's called the National League and the American League. So they're two different leagues. And the winner of each league will play each other in the what's called the Super Bowl.
The Super Bowl
is football, but well, you may have a different way for it.
World Series, isn't it?
World Series? World Series, exactly. Okay?
Ooh.
Now,
Englishman.
Yeah.
We play cricket.
I think the Americans could call a World Series where only American teams
yeah. Now, when I was a kid, you know, one of the head teams in the American League was the New York Yankees. And, of course, all New Yorkers, by definition, were Yankee fans. But then the National League created a new team called the Mets, M-E-T-S, the New York Mets. And suffice it to say, they were the underdogs. I mean, they were really not putting it together. You know, maybe they didn't have enough Spanish speakers on the team. I don't know. But anyway, they weren't doing the job. Mm-hmm. I became a Met fan almost from day one because I liked the underdog. And my good friend Ira, my best friend, he remained loyal to the Yankees. And in a pre-series game, because it was unthinkable that the Yankees would play against the Mets in what would be the World Series. The Mets were always coming in last, you know. In a pre-game series in Shea Stadium in New York, the Mets played against the Yankees. And that's where my friendship really suffered its greatest challenge, because he was rooting for the Yankees and I was rooting for the Mets. All right. But we'll see exactly where the Tirza is the underdog here. And now we're going to start with Rashi. What I want you to focus on now is the Rashi at the end of Sefer Bamidbar. It's almost the last Rashi in the book. And Rashi says, Kan Manon. What does Manon mean? He lists them, right? Kan, here in Parshas Masai, he lists them. Lefi Gdulasam. Zumi Zubishonim.
Age.
Okay, so who's the oldest? Again, we always know that Machla is the oldest, correct? Because Machla is always first, so she's definitely the oldest. There's no question about that. Right, check me out on that. Right, Machla is always first. Yes, no, maybe so.
Yeah.
Machla is always first. Okay, good. Now, who's second in age?
Tirtz
is second in age. Okay. However, he says, "V'nasu kiseder toldasam." Right, the Torah here at the end of Parshas Masa, at the end of Bamidbar, is describing, is recording their marriage. And the reason why there's so much significance in their marriage is because they had to marry within the shevet; they couldn't marry from one shevet to the other because then their nachal and Eretz Yisrael would be shifted to a different shave it. So the marriage, so Rashi says they got married in order of their age, which is always a good thing. That's the easy way. Mm-hmm. It becomes more complicated if you have many children, can I know, and they don't get married according to their age. But in this case, Slavka lucked out. Then he says, Ubechal Abnikra, which means consistently, and now he's comparing it to Pinchas, because in Pinchas, twice the Torah gives us the list. Manan Lefichach Masan. Okay. Umagid sheshkulos zukizu. So what Rashi is saying over here is that they were counted according to their wisdom elsewhere, not here in Masai. And all of a sudden, the youngest, Noah, becomes number two. Now, Rashi doesn't explain to us why Machla always remains number one. You get the impression that she was tops in both. She was the oldest, she was the Bechora, as we call it, and at the same time, she was the Gdola Bechachma, she was the wisest of them all. So Machla is hands down. How do we say it? No contest.
But Noah is fighting above her weight and age.
Exactly. Noah was first because of her wisdom. Okay?
Second.
I'm saying, what I meant to say by first, you see the word first is a relative term. So what I meant to say is first as opposed to tirtz. In other words, what we're doing now is we're focusing on numbers 2 and 5 that swap around, right? 2 being Noah in the case of Parshas Pinchas, what Rashi calls Bechala Nikra, that's the Lashon of Rashi. And now in Parshas Masai, Noah, becomes last. And why is Noah last? Because she's the last one to get married, because she's the youngest one. Okay, why does she deserve to be, again, first? When I say first, I mean in the comparison between her and Tirzah in Parshas Pinchas. And the answer is because she's wiser than Tirzah. And then after Rashi's whole presentation, he ends with the words, Umagid Sheshkulos Zukizu. What does that mean?
They're all
equal. They're all the same. So Rashi is a little bit strange over here. And that's how I want to study with you, because in the Gemara Bava Basra, and the Gemara raises this contradiction between the order of Parshas Pinchas and the order of the daughters of Slochet in Parshas Maasai, the Gemara itself quotes two opinions on this question. And the Gemara is trying to answer this, or reconcile this contradiction, and the Gemara takes two approaches. One approach is to say there's no contradiction because they're two different systems of counting. One system of counting here in Parshas Pinchas is according to their age, correct?
According
to their wisdom, right? That's why Noah is second. Whereas the system of counting in Parshas Maasai is according to their age, and that's why Noah is last, correct? And Tirzah becomes, again, relatively first. Then the Gemara offers a second answer in time. Yeah, okay, so that's here. Take a look on page 148.
It's on our handout.
In the handout. Yeah?
Yeah.
It's actually the second page in your handout. And it's on the end of the first line on the top of that page. The Gemara says the following.
So, what's the reference to the Gemara? Which Gemara?
This is on line 3, you'll see. He tells you in Babasa Kufcha. I was actually going to photocopy that page for you.
That's just good for me to know for her Bar Mitzvah.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I'll add to this year.
Well, again, I think you might want Tirzah. You want to wait for Tirzah's Bar Mitzvah. Okay, we'll see. I'm rooting here for the underdog. Okay. Fine. No, but truth is that you can use this for Noah also, but it for Noah, it's going to be not complimentary as much as challenging, if you follow me.
Okay.
Notice we're going to set the bar on an ethical level, what Noah's challenge is, because Noah is endowed with natural wisdom. Okay, so I don't want to give away the whole punchline of the shiur, but I think you're probably already guessing which way we're going to go. But first, let's focus on Rashi, comparing Rashi to the Gemara in Bava Basra. The Gemara in Bava Basra says the following. Okay, it's missing a few words. The first few words in the Gemara are Parshas Pinchas. Okay, Parshas Pinchas. And the Gemara says the following. Lahalan means further on, which in this case means Parshas Maasai. Manon hakos of the Torah counts them kiderech gedulasam, meaning their age, who's older. And Rashi says the reason for that is because they got married in that sequence. V'kan, but here in Parshas Pinchas, because again the Gemara is focused on Parshas Pinchas, derech chachmasa. Okay, so the switchover from Noah and Tirzah is explained in that way. And Misayel Leila Rabbi Ami, this is a support to a separate sentence, a separate pronouncement of Rabbi Ami. Now, I'll just give you a little background to what Rabbi Ami is about. Rabbi Ami wants to know, halacha goes, as you know very well, and Rabbi Weiss always points this out, halacha goes into the nitty-gritty details. Nothing's ignored by halacha. So I'm going to ask you a question, and you'll say to me, like, who cares, kind of thing. But the halacha is very concerned about this. When you organize a seating arrangement, what should be your criteria for who sits where? Let's imagine they're sitting in a row. You know, I'm not talking about a circle, a semicircle. Let's say in a row, for example. Let's just make it a little easier to picture what the Gemara has in mind. But who should sit closest up front? Who should get, in that sense, the covet or the chivas of being in the...
The wisest.
So should it be by age or by wisdom?
And this is to the head of the table, which should be the father.
Yeah, in other words, what I'm assuming is the Rebbe is sitting here, or the father is sitting here.
Right.
Who gets the first seat? Who gets the second seat? Who gets all the way in the back?
That's a big machloket in my family, actually.
So if
you know the Sanhedrin,
so it's also machloket in the Gemara. But I think Rav Ami is the intuitively the simplest way of going.
Hmm.
Rav Ami says the following: Be yeshiva. I'll get back to that in a minute.
Sanhedrin.
Halach acher chachma. Whoever's wisest gets the front seat.
Not the Sanhedrin. It wasn't at the beginning of the
Sanhedrin is part of this whole sugya over here. But I don't want to get off on a tangent because I know you guys are pressured for time. So
it's on the right of the head of the table. Like, as the head of the table faces down, that would be to the right. That would be.
Okay, I don't know, David. I was talking about a single file kind of thing, just to avoid right, left, and, you know what I mean? Just who's closest to the front desk. Again, this is a gigantic sugya. Only a small part of it overlaps with our discussion about Tirtza and Noah, okay? B'mesiba. Okay, we'll get back to that. Halach achar zikna. Okay, so there's chachma and there's zikna. And whether or not you should be putting them in a certain order, what should be the criterion for where they should sit? It depends. There's never a simple answer in halacha. If you're talking about yeshiva, it's chachma. What's yeshiva? Yeshiva, Rashi says, is for any Torah convention. Or Sanhedrin would be another example. In other words, when we're gathering people together for the study of Torah, then who gets to sit up front? The wisest. Who sits in the back, Nebuch? The least wise, we'll call them. We don't want to use any pejorative terms, okay? Then we get to Mesiva.
Bad boys today.
Right?
I told Harvey when we came in, you're up with the bad boys, up the back with the bad
right,
boys.
Right, right. My father was checking out a young man for my sister. You know, this is 40 years ago. My sister's already a grandmother many times over. But, and he called up his good friend, Rabbi Schoenfeld, Shlita, who lives here in the neighborhood, to ask him about this young man. So Rabbi Schoenfeld was very clever. He says, Rabbi Berzon, he sits in the back. I don't know him too well. My father got the hint. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, the Mesiba. Mesiba means a
seating room.
But no. In both cases, we're talking about a seating arrangement, whether we're talking about yeshiva or mesiba. But the contrast between yeshiva and mesiba is that mesiba has to do with a family get-together, friends getting together. It's not a Torah convocation or convention. You know, we're not here to study Torah.
We're here to eat.
You're mesiba. To hoopla. We're having a good time. It's a nice social event.
Yeah.
Okay, we got to get it in this week because next week we don't have Mesivas. It's already the 9 days. But in that sense, the oldest comes first. So again, when we're dealing with Chachma, with Torah, with wisdom, with Sanhedrin, then the wisest gets the first seat. When we're dealing with a social gathering, then the Zkena, meaning the oldest, gets first, gets to sit up front. And the Gemara thinks that our story here between Tirtza and Noah and the Stira Kaviyachol, the contradiction, the apparent contradiction in the order, the sequence, is a proof to Rav Ami. Noah is wiser than Tirtza, and she gets, in Parshas Pinchas, Lefi Chachma, she's going to get the second seat. Forget about Machlo, she's on top, right? But that's because, for some reason, I don't know why, Parshas Pinchas is called what? In the language of the Gemara? Yeshiva. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. At the end, we're just making mathematical calculations here. Parshas Masai, on the other hand, Noah gets the back seat. Who gets pushed up front? Again, when I say front, is Tirtza. And why? Because here we're dealing with not yeshiva, but rather mesiba. What kind of mesiba? This is a little easier than Pinchas. What kind of mesiba?
The marriage.
Marriage. Marriage is always called a mesiba. You know, we get together, we're celebrating a wedding, who's going to get married first? All that comes under a non-Torah, you know, calculation of a seating arrangement, right? So if you were, let's say, organizing a dais, you know, let's say, but now we're talking about going horizontally, you know, I don't know who sits close to the chasen or to the kala on the dais. So then it would go according to age. Correct? And in that sense, Tirza would come before Noah. And not only Tirza, but Milka and Chagla also would come before Noah, right? But if you're talking about a, I don't know if this is the right word in English, a convocation for Torah study, a gathering for Torah study, then Noah comes before Tirza. Why? Because Noah is greater in Chochmah. And this reconciliation of Parshas Pinchas and Parshas Masai is a proof positive for Rav Ami. And then the Gemara says, no, there's no proof. Why not? Because I have a different reconciliation. And that's Tana de Beir Rav Yishmael. Benos Tzlovkot Shkulos Hayu. Shenemar Vatiyena. The Pasuk says here, at the end of Masai, Vatiyena. Pasuk Yiral. Vatiyena Machlo Tirtzav Chogla Mikol. So Vatiyena is always a reference to the very existence, like Vayehi. Vayehi means and emerged and create. It was created. So in essence, Vatiyena, in terms of the Havaya is the very essence, is Kulon Shkulos. They're all equal. Now to appreciate Rabbi Yishmael, we would have to see a Gemara in Masech Krisus, which is the paragraph that starts Rashi. Do you see that third paragraph on your page? Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's a long sugya which we're not going to go through in Masechta Krisus, which begins on line 5 of that paragraph. Okay, if you have that, page 148, paragraph 3, line 5. I don't know if that helps you. And the Gemara there points out that usually in the sequence, Kvasim come before Ezim. You know, in the various animals that you bring for a carbon, the sheep come before the goats, always in the sequence. And therefore, you would get the impression that if you had a choice between bringing a sheep or a goat, which would come first? Sheep, right? But in one case in the Torah reverses the order, and the goats are listed before the sheep. Again, if we had time, we'd spend a half hour on this. We don't have time. So the Gemara says, Rav Shimon says in the Mishnah, you know why the Torah switched the order? Yochel, you might think, Muvcharim mayhem, that sheep have top sequence and preference over goats. Talmud Lomar, therefore the Torah switched the order on one occasion just to tell you, Shkulos hayim, that it doesn't matter which you want to bring. When I say it doesn't matter, it means the species doesn't matter. There may be many other considerations or variables. For example, if the sheep is more beautiful, and then or the goat is more beautiful, so. But as far as the species per se, they're equal. Then the Torah usually has Ben Yonah. This is what's called the carbonola. Ben Yonah usually comes before tar. These are different types of dove turtles. But in one occasion, the Torah went ahead and put Torim u'bnei Yonah, put the Torah first, to teach you shkulim, hey? The Torah usually puts the father before the mother, kaved es, help me out here, Rabosai. Avicha v'simecha, but yet, it says, ish imo v'aviv tiro, to tell you shkulim, hey? That a mother and a father have the same demand. That's why if they're divorced, you know, you have to toss, you know.
Who do you get the water for?
I'm just saying, if the father and the mother are divorced, so who does the child bring the cup of tea to first? You know, so that's really complicated. Then it really has to do with Ein Ofer V'Al Mitzvahs, you know, who came first or who's closer or whatever. But basically, Kibud Av V'Em are equal, and how do we know the Shkulim? Because in one occasion, the Torah put the mother before the father. Says Rabbi Yishmael, the same thing here. Why did the Torah, in one occasion, put Noah first and Tirza second, and the other occasion the other way around, to tell you that they're all shkulos? Shkulot. Shkulot means they're all equal.
Oh, right.
Now wait a second. Question for you. Does the Gemara itself, in its first presentation, together with Rav Ami, agree with Rabbi Yishmael? Mm-hmm. Are they all shkulos?
It's a different category of
No.
Equal.
I'm saying the following. If you're talking about the inherent, you know, not inborn, you know, chachma and wisdom and so forth, but you talk
how much they were.
Right. What does the Gemara tell us before Tana Bei Yishmael on the top of your page 148? I'm going backwards again. Before we had Tana Bei Yishmael, the Gemara says clearly that if we talk about essential qualities of chachma, who comes first?
Noah.
Noah. So is the Gemara therefore assuming that they're shkulos, they're equal? Obviously not. Are you with me on this? I see I lost you already. No, that's not good. If I lost you, that's not good, because this is the main point of the shiur.
It's a different kind of way of assessing someone, not just in terms of their wisdom, not just because of their
faith. Okay, so David, you may be a step ahead of me. I can't even think that far ahead. So you're brilliant. But I'm just saying, on one level, forgetting that age now, because age has nothing to do with shkulos. You know, you can never say that they're shkulos with regard to age, because obviously one is older than the other. That's just the reality, that's a fact of life. But with regard to Chachma, or for example, if you remember of Ami's yeshiva, who got the better seat? Noah or Tirza?
Noah.
Why? Because she was greater than Tirza, right? Now, we see Rabbi Yishmael is saying that the Torah went out of its way to Mishka Babel, you know, like in Scrabble, you know, what's that game called? Not the old style Scrabble that I used to play. That
Boggle. Boggle,
is that what it is? Boggle Scrabble. You know, they put all the Scrabble letters and you mix it up. So, according to Rabbi Yishmael, the Torah deliberately mixed it all up. Mishka Babel. And the reason for the contradiction between Parshas Pinchas and Parshas Masai is to teach that they're all equal. Now the strange thing is that Rashi, getting back to the last Rashi in Chumash Bamidbar, basically combines the whole Gemara into one. If you talk about Boggle, here's the big Boggle. This is the big Boggle. You know? And Rashi on the one hand says that I can reconcile this contradiction by saying that there are two different criterions. The criterion back in Pinchas is Chachma. The criterion here in Masai is age, correct? Is age. Lufi Gdulasan. And then Rashi goes ahead and says, you know why the Torah changed the order? Is to teach you that Shkulo Zukizu, which is Tana Debe Rabbi Yishmael. So who... First of all, I have two questions. They're basically the same identical question. Why is Rashi mixing two different answers in the Gemara? That's question number one. And question number two, because these two answers are at loggerheads, and there's a real bona fide machlokas here, was Noah superior to Tirza or not? How could Rashi combine them in one breath? They're irreconcilable. Okay. So having formulated those two questions, let's go on to page 149. Okay. Remember I asked you before, why is Parshas Pinchas called Yeshiva? Anybody have a knee-jerk response to that question? Why would you say that Parshas Pinchas is Yeshiva, Doc?
When we deal with these ladies that came to him with a question.
Excellent. Brilliant.
And they answered.
The man's a genius. And he's always like five steps ahead of me. David's also a genius, but you know, he's not always consistent. You know? Just kidding. So the doc is right. Parshas Pinchas is called Yeshiva because the girls are coming forward with a halachic issue, a question. And I have no doubt in my mind, and no one will doubt this, that they were hoping for a specific answer to their question. Not a no, but a yes. Do we have rights to inherit a land, a portion in Israel? And we have no question about it. Chazal speak about it over and over again. We spoke about it here, I think, 2 weeks ago. Noshim mechavos eretz Yisrael. They wanted a portion in the land of Israel. Now, what would you do if you came forward in front of the court, whatever court it is, and you wanted to get a certain specific answer? Who would you hire? If it meant a lot to you.
The best lawyer.
The best lawyer you possibly could. Okay. Now, if you had a choice between Noah and Tirza, who would you choose to present your case in front of Moshe Rabbeinu? And keep in mind, you can anticipate that Moshe is going to counter argue. And you already have in your back pocket, you know, foreseeing what the court is going to say. You have an answer to the next claim, and back and forth like a ping. So who's going to come first? No. Okay. That's as far as Parshas Pinchas is concerned. If we talk about Parshas Masai, the order of age, and of course marriage, then Noah takes the back seat because she's the youngest. You know, we love the youngest. In fact, we have a special dance at the wedding of the youngest. Anybody know what that's called?
Mezhinka,
right? The Mezhinka. Everybody has a different way of pronouncing it. You know, the Mezhinka. Some Hasidim call it the Mitzvah Tanz.
Yeah.
We call it the Averit Tanz. Because they mix men and women, it's all. But anyway, so that's fine. So Noah is up front in Pinchas, that's called Yeshiva. She's going to put the arguments in front of Moshe Rabbeinu. She's going to figure out in her wisdom what anticipate what Moshe is going to say. She has already a response prepared. That's Noah. That's Parshas Pinchas. Then we get to Parshas Masai, and that's marriage, and that's oldest first. You know, we don't want to marry the younger one off before. I'm sure there were plenty of people who want to marry Noah, and it's a very tricky thing for parents, but Noah, wait your turn. Fine. However, now here, I want to show you something that's brilliant. He says the following. We're on page 149, and the first major paragraph, if you know what I mean, which maybe you'd call it the second paragraph. He says the following. The Parshas Pinchas, surely in Parshas Pinchas, we go through Chachma, correct? And Noah gets the first, again, when I say first, I mean relative to Tirtza, the first dibs, right? She's going to be pushed forward. And what is going through Tirtza's mind now? Because again, Tirtza is a lot older than Noah. So what could you imagine about Rabosa is going through the mind of an older girl who, in a sense, deserves more respect and honor than her younger sister, and yet the Torah, not once but twice in Parshas Pinchas, puts the younger sister first. What would you say is going through Tirtz's mind?
Should be upset
because she's getting really cut down. You know, I don't want to use too many different adjectives, but she's not feeling great about it. Oh. So comes along Tirtza, and she takes a back seat. And that's fine, that's the Gemara of Rav Ami, and that's Yeshiva, and Tirtza, Kala Kavodla, she takes the back seat, she doesn't start banging on the table, she doesn't make a hullabaloo, and she's Mekabelas Adin, Mekabelas Adin.
It's like Ephraim and Menashe as well.
Yeah, so I don't know, I'm not sure, I don't know, Doc, maybe you know what Menashe was feeling at that time. I can only imagine what he was feeling, I don't know. Did the Chazal say anything about what Menashe was feeling when he was given the left hand instead of the right hand?
He was quite happy.
Menashe was happy about that?
Well, I would have thought, you know. I don't know.
I plead the fifth, as we say.
Where the preference has been for the younger to take the...
To take the young one first.
Yeah.
I don't. You're right. The same thing happened. But I don't remember what Chazal said about Menashe.
What you mean by Chazal? Right? The Musa idea is you give your bracha to your children to be like Ephraim and Menashe, because just that, they were different. And one was the young one. Was
Menashe right, didn't feel jealous.
He didn't feel any sympathy. Okay.
Good. So, Doc, hold on to that because that's brilliant. But I think here we're going to see something even more profound than what we see by Ephraim Menashe, I think. He says the following. How do we define Chachma? Again, are you with me? Because I want to see it. You can see it inside. The Parashas Pinchas. That's the name of the paragraph.
Yeah.
How do we define Chachma? You know what? Chachma is defined by what we call Kishronot Bruchim. Right?
Spiritual qualities.
No, not spiritual qualities, Doc. Do you have in England something called an IQ test?
Yeah.
That's not an American thing, is it?
It's in England.
They do it in England as well. Okay? Now, Harvey, I'm not going to ask you what you scored on your IQ test, because I don't want to get too personal. But my guess is you did very well. Are you willing to admit that?
Yes. All right.
Yeah. You just don't want to disagree with me. Okay. I'm just going to guess you probably have, you know, again, in again, I don't know if the scoring is the same in America, but above 150 is like brilliant. And I would guess, Harvey, that your IQ is somewhere about 160, I'm guessing. Okay? But imagine another guy, Harvey. We won't name him. Okay? We'll protect the innocent. We'll call him Yankel Beryl. And he has an IQ of 110. He's not retarded, but, you know, he's what you call average. The average IQ in America in my day, when I was a kid, was between 100 and 110. Okay? So who's the greater Chacham? Harvey, you're the greater Chacham, right? So if Noah takes an IQ test and she gets 160, 170, 180, maybe she scored 200. I once in my life met someone who claims he had a 200. I don't know if it's true. Maybe he's lying to me. I don't know. Noah gets a 200, okay? Tirza, she's get 110, 120 maybe. We'll give her, we'll be a little more fargin, you know. He says, but Muskel Rishon, what everyone thinks intuitively is that Noah is superior to Tirza. After all, God endowed her by birth, by nature, with a seichel, a superior seichel. She has the capacity to do brilliant things and accomplish unbelievable things in anything related to science, mathematics, or any other field. But there's only one thing over here. When you talk about a person's natural intelligence, you can talk about many, many different dimensions. One person, for example, has a brilliant memory. Bar Sid Vienna Menapi Tipa. Never forgets anything. Another person, Yesh Amkus, has depth of thought, profound thinking, analytical qualities. Another person, Kosher Nituach. They have a wonderful way of expressing their Nituach means their, you know, the surgical operation of a logical concept. You know, taking it apart, taking it down to its, breaking it into its component parts. Others, Yesh Tfisa Mehira, quick grasp. Every one of them was born with their particular kishronos, their talents. Some more, some greater, some less. He says, and that's the next paragraph, today there's a tremendous mistake that's so popular amongst parents, amongst educators. They believe that, you know who's the superior student? The one who is endowed by birth with superior intellectual capabilities and qualities. The other guy, Nebuch, he's not a chacham. He doesn't have those qualities. He can't get very far. And naturally he becomes insulted. But let's ask the following question. I don't know if we have any autistic people in the room here. Plony Almoni, we'll call him. He's an artist. I'm not an artist. Should I be insulted? I just wasn't endowed with the capability of being an artist. I don't have artistic talents. He says this to the same extent that someone who wasn't given these endowed with these superior intellectual qualities doesn't have to be embarrassed because he's not this superior intellect with a 160 IQ. So too, a person who's not an artist, you know, give him a paintbrush, he doesn't know the first thing what to do about it. Although today, you know, if he takes the paintbrush, dips it into enough different colors and throws it onto the canvas, it might be considered modern art. Sell for $1 million. I don't know. He says, Rov b'nei Adam, your average person is born with an average intelligence. Or maybe even below average if you compare it with the superior intellect. And yet, people put all their attention on the natural capabilities and talents that a person is born with. What they're missing is the point that chachma is something that has to be acquired. A person has to work very hard to acquire chachma. And that sweat and toil will bring tremendous fruits. Hey, idu kama v'kama gdoli yisro, the last paragraph, I'd love you to underline this, in this paragraph, the last line in the paragraph. Many of the greats of Israel testified about themselves. Kilo noldu bruchei kishron. I don't know if you ever heard the story about the Netziv Mivalozhin. One of the greatest of the last two and a half centuries. The Netziv Mivalozhin once overheard a discussion of his parents when he was a little boy. And his parents were crying because the Rebbe told them that Nebuch, little Naftali Tzvi Yehuda, is not going to make it. He just doesn't have it. And when the Netziv as a boy heard this, he broke out in tears because he overheard his parents saying we should start training him to be a painter or a carpenter or so forth. At least the doctor makes some money. I don't know. Rands are basically, I don't know anything about Rands. But actually, in America, it's gotten worse already.
In America, I'm sure you know.
So, could you imagine Rabosai? I don't even believe what I'm saying is true, but this is the legend that the Netziv had average intelligence, if not below average. Again, I don't believe that. I can't even fathom that, because the Netziv is the author of an unbelievable amount of Torah works. Each one is more brilliant than the other one. He says that people say the following. This is the next paragraph. Ezu chacham ha-makir es makom. Where is that Mishnah? Anybody know? Ezu chacham ha-makir es makomo? Ah, very good. You're right and you're wrong. There is no such Mishnah as Ezu hu chacham ha-makir es makom. It doesn't exist. It's a phrase, it's an idiomatic phrase that the Jewish people have invented. But in Avos Harvey, there's a list of 48 midos shatorah niknes for him, what's called kinyoni atorah. And one of those kinyoni atorah is called ha-makir es makom. And here I want you to turn to page 150. What is ha-makir es makom? What kind of a midah is that? And it's one of the 48 ways to wisdom. You know that Rabbi Weinberg, Olav Shalom, I don't know if any of you knew him. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Weinberg from the old city of Noach Weinberg. Did you heard of him? He created an organization called Eish HaTorah. He was one of the greatest Kiruv people that ever lived in Jewish history. So he had a whole lecture series based on the 48 ways of wisdom, you know. So what is Makir es Makom? Makir es Makomo, the Rishonim say, Eino medaber bifnei misha gadol heimen. You're sitting in a classroom, or you're sitting in Sanhedrin, and you know very well that this person, Rabbi so-and-so, is a greater scholar than you are. You take a back seat. What does it mean you take a back seat? You listen. You keep quiet. You want to hear what he has to say. You don't judge, come to a rash conclusion. Let's think about it. Let's analyze it. He says that the great midah of Makir es Makomo is someone who's willing to slowly and methodically take apart a subject matter with quiet, with snus, in a very, very private way. And Shlomo HaMelech in the next paragraph says in Mishlei, Baz Zadon, Zadon is always a person who's like full of himself. He's a Baal Zadon. He's a Rasha. V'yavi kolon, and he brings embarrassment. But snuim chachma. Now, how would you translate the word snua?
Modest.
What's the relationship between modesty and wisdom? They seem to be so irrelevant to each other. Says the Ralbag, one of the super commentaries on Tanakh, that what Shlomo HaMelech has in mind is that when this Rasha comes along and he thinks he knows everything, and he's rash and he's brash and he comes to immediate conclusions and he judges everything immediately without ayin, iyun, without looking below the surface and studying, then what comes in the wake is kolon uboshes, things about which we can be embarrassed about. However, who's the tsanua? The tsanua, the modest person, is not willing to say immediately, with a knee-jerk response, oh, I know all the answers to your questions. Rabosa, I tell you, I've been teaching for a long time. And I have a lot of students who, they don't even think, and they give me an answer without even thinking it out. It comes from a certain, exaggerated sense of self-confidence. But then I have students who are very quiet, humble sort of way. They let the chachma filter in, they assimilate the knowledge, they take it apart, slowly, piece by piece. He says, V'tznuim are chachma. Why? You know where to find chachma? Find chachma in the tznuim. Not with these brilliant guys who think, well, I know the answer right away. They come to a conclusion, they judge it very quickly, rashly. No. We need iyun. We need someone who's willing to say with great modesty that I want to study it, I want to take it apart, I want to develop it, until finally I understand it very well. And here, in the next paragraph, and this is again, David, if Mirz Hashem, you'll have another daughter, we'll talk about Tirza, right? Tirza, what's the greatness of Tirza? Makira es makom. She fulfills this dictum of Ezehu Chacham, who is the true Chacham? He's a person who is Makir es makom. Why? She realizes full well that her younger sister Noah was blessed with greater natural intellectual capacities and qualities and talents than she was. She realizes that very well and acknowledges that Noah is superior to her in natural wisdom. And therefore she gives Noah her place, which is number two, right? And she goes to sit all the way in the back, number five. She's Makeres Es Makoma. And what brings her to that state of Makeres Es Makoma? It's Chachma. What kind of Chachma? Not the Chachma of Moledet, meaning of Leda, that you're born with. That's Noah. Noah is super intelligent. She's endowed with an IQ of 160 to 200. But no. The Chachma of Tirza is a different kind of a Chachma. And perhaps even a superior Chachma. That's why I vote for the underdog here. She has what's called Chachma Niknes. Chachma that you have to work hard in order to attain and achieve that Chachma. And that's what she did, Tirza. You know what? She sat in the back. She was listening very carefully and very intently to every word of the sisters who are younger than her, perhaps. Or in this case, Noah is younger than her. But the intelligence of Noah. That she gave tremendous respect for, and she let the ideas of Noah sink into her system, and Tirza would digest what Noah said. She was a tznua in the sense that she humbly took her place in the back. She knew where in the whole, you know, the whole structure, the tic-tac-toe, where should be her place. Eino bedaber b'fnei misha gadol emenah. She would not have the audacity to speak first and take that first initiative before the person who is greater and superior to her in Chachma. And now we understand Rashi in our parasha. Rashi is correct. Noah comes first in Parashas Pinchas, because certainly Tirza is going to, because Tirza personifies Tznius, she's a Yodasis Makoma, Makiris Makoma, she's going to certainly expect that Noah come first, because in level of natural intelligence, Noah is superior to Tirza. Tirza was not blessed with those natural, inborn, innate talents and intelligence like Noah was. Her Kishronos were on a lower level. She didn't have the 160, she had the 110. But Tirza, lo nosno ledaver zelafria, she would not let that impediment hold her back. And therefore, she has that chachma of a tznua. Rashi says in Parshas Pinchas, regarding this, you can open up if you have the Chumash to Chav Zayin Posuk Dalet. Rashi says, Magid Shechachmanios Hayu. They were all brilliant. Rashi doesn't differentiate here between Noah and Tirza, as he does here at the end of Parshas Bamidbar. The answer is that although there's a difference in the natural brilliance of a Noah and a Tirza, nevertheless, on the level of Chachma, of true Chachma, they each have and each come to the table with their unique capability. Tirza, although she doesn't have that brilliant IQ that we spoke about, but she's a Makira Es Makoma. And therefore she can acquire Chachma in a very, very unique kind of way. She makes what's called a Kinyan on Chachma. That's why it's listed in the Kinyoni HaTorah, Makira Es Makoma. Kinyan means she really possesses that which she knows. I can tell you, Rav Osai, for my students, I have two categories of students. I have students who take an exam, and the very next morning they forgot everything. I don't know if you have a cram for an exam, we call it. Is that cram?
Squeeze. Yeah,
that's okay? I remember I took a course in graduate school called Phenomenology. And the only way I could pass this test is the professor who came from France, he was kind enough to let us copy his notes. 250 pages of typewritten notes. I locked myself in an office for 3 weeks. I didn't see the light of day. My wife had to feed me under the door, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. and I got a B plus in the course only because I was able to retain that memory for about 2 hours. Ask me the next morning or the next evening what was phenomenology all about, forget it. But sometimes you have students who work methodically, you know, with a great deal of hard work. They're not lazy until they assimilate their knowledge. These are people, you can ask them 20 years later, they may not remember all the details, but they're oriented. And that's Tirtza. Tirtza may have to work harder than Noah, but Tirtza could accomplish even that much more because she is Makeres Es Makoma. And that's why Rashi says they were all brilliant, each one in their own way. And at this point, the Rebbe goes on to say, he sort of lets out a krechts, you know, he complains about the fact that there's this widespread mistake with regard to Kishronos. You could have different children in a family or different students in an educational setting, and everyone gives the respect and the evaluation to the person who's naturally brilliant because that child shows, you know, displays such talent and such potential. That child will be able to answer your questions immediately, and they give superior treatment, you know, preferential treatment to that child. He says it's a terrible, terrible mistake. What an educator has to realize, and this is so true, is that the children who may have to work harder because they don't have that endowment, those are the children that could go even further. Because if you guide them and if you encourage them, he says, at the end of the day, even they're not iluyim, you know, it doesn't come to them easy, they can develop a certain kind of chachma v'tznua that is superior. He describes the situation of a father who has two children. That's a paragraph that says kasher. One of them was blessed with tremendous capabilities by birth. The other one is a tznua, who's a makiris makoma. He wasn't blessed with those same qualities. But what the father has to realize is that both have tremendous potential. And perhaps even in the case of the tznua, there's even a greater potential. That's what we called kshkulim hein. That's what Rabbi Eliezer wanted to say. And Rashi says both are correct. On the one hand, there is going to be a sequence in which Noah comes before Tirtza, that's Parshas Pinchas, because of her inherent and inborn natural chachma, the endowment of superior intellect. But on the other hand, Rabbi Lozer is also right. Rabbi Shmuel is also correct. And what is Rabbi Shmuel teaching us? Kulam shkulamen. Even though Tirtza doesn't have those intellectual endowments, but nevertheless, she has the same, if not a greater potential than that of Noah, because she is a makeres es makoma. And if he says we can take this message to heart, Ein kol kesher, this is a paragraph on Nachta, maybe you could underline this. Ein kol kesher ven kisharon l'hatzlocha b'torah. There is no... You see, I wouldn't have gone as far as he does. I wouldn't have said this, but he goes very, very far. He says there's no relationship between kisharon, natural talents, and success in Torah. Everyone, no matter whether he's superior in intellect or not, has the same capacity to reach success and hatzlocha. Kishem, he gives a mashal. Kol echad mevin shebachur gavoh namuch. Someone who's tall, someone who's short, someone who has brown hair, someone who has red hair. That's natural, but has nothing whatsoever to do with success in Torah learning. So too, natural capabilities and inborn brilliance has nothing to do with success in Torah. Success in Torah depends totally upon ratzon, the will to succeed, the will to dedicate oneself to learning, and number two, yegiya, to implement that harva, what we call in Yiddish. Harva means sweat and toil. That's going to determine success. And we'll conclude with a story here about Rav Baruch Ber on page 152. Rav Baruch Ber was the great Rosh Hashiva back in the next city over was called Kovna, and his outstanding Talmud, Rav Aaron Kotler, who later became the Rosh Hashiva in Lakewood, first he was Rosh Hashiva in Kletsk in Lita, he once saw that Rav Baruch Ber was very distressed. He was distraught. So he asked his Rebbe, what happened? So Rav Baruch Ber says, I've been working for 2 weeks. 2 weeks. The great Rav Baruch Ber Lovitz on a piece in the Rashba. A paragraph in the Rashba. And it was shver, very difficult. Perek Merubah. That's what you're learning now. Perek Merubah, correct? Or if you didn't start it, maybe tomorrow is Perek Merubah. And he says that after 2 weeks of harving on this Rashba, Rav Menachem Zemba, who's known as a genius of geniuses, he was in the Warsaw ghetto, you know, when the uprising and everything else. Rav Menachem Zemba came in to visit me, and I showed him the Rashba, and I asked him all my kashas in the Rashba. He offered me 4 different explanations of the Rashba. Each one was better than the next one. So Rav Baron says, Rebbe, you know what? You worked hard on the Rashba. Your understanding of the Rashba is greater than that of Menachem Zemba. You were sick over the Rashba. You made yourself into a sick person to try to understand the Rashba. You will be that much greater in your understanding of the Rashba. And therefore he concludes by saying, Tznuim Chachma. Why is Chachma given to the Tznuim? The Tznuim who understand that even if they can't brag and boast about their natural brilliance, they're not born geniuses, that's not the condition. They understand very well. That's not the precondition to success in Torah learning. The primary condition is to have a will to know the Torah, to know all of the Torah. And with that powerful will and amelus b'Torah, a person will be zocha to Torah. Kol banayich limudei Hashem v'rav shalom banayich ken yiratzon. Amen.
Who's the author?
This is, you know, every time we learn this, Ahemi Nachmuni is Rav Yitzchok Menachem Weinberg the Tolanerim. Okay then. If you have the photocopies, you could already make a book out of it. Because if you file the photocopy, because this is impossible to get a hold of. I've tried all over the show, and thank God my mechudin has one copy, and I've been borrowing it piecemeal. Now I'm finishing Bamidbar. I got to get over there to get far. I hope I'll get there before next week. If you know what I mean. That's it.
If I was to put an argument in defense of Noah.
I mean, this wasn't meant to be a negative Noah.
I want to put the positive slant on Noah, that she's beautiful and brilliant, and every man wants to marry her, but she beats them away in honor, to wait for the plain Jane, boring Tirza to finally find a nice guy. Noah has to, wait her turn.
That's excellent. So, just to repeat what David is saying in my own words, I mean, he said it better than me, but that there are two sides to the coin. Tirza is a tznuah because she takes the back seat, allowing Noah and Chochma to take the front seat. Noah, on the other hand, is great. She also is a tznuah because when it comes to marriage and all the suitors that are banging down her door, she takes the back seat in honor of Tirza because she knows that Tirza is older and deserves to get the first share. This, by the way, today in Shidduchim is a major moral question. It's not only two sisters; it could be a sister and a brother. You know, and I know of cases of young men that at the age of 25 they start dating. And in my day, that was common. That was common practice. Today, in the so-called yeshiva world, the fellows start dating at the age of 22, 3 years early. So what is going on? Why are they telling me that this guy is 25 and he hasn't gone out with one single girl? And the answer is he has an older sister. Mm-hmm. And this becomes a moral issue. I personally, maybe you can hold up a guy for a year, maybe, I don't know, a year and a half, I don't know how long. But at some point, you can't hold back the younger siblings. It's not fair. Mm. They also have rights here, in my humble opinion. Mm. But the poskim are dealing with these issues, and it's not simple. This is like dine nefashis. It's like because how do you tell a young man, or a young woman, if it's a younger sister, whatever it might be, and every case is different. Mm. You can have a sister who delays going out because she has an older brother. Mm-hmm. That's how far it goes. Now, I'm not here to judge one way or the other. It's such a difficult issue. Mm-hmm. And if Noah took a back seat allowing Tirzah to get married first, then Kol HaKavod, we applaud that. You know. And I'm sure she got a good shidduch. And she will get a good shidduch. Start looking around now, David. It's not too... You know, I have a number
of grants problems. My Noah is exactly like the Noah in the Pasha.
And of course, she's not no better than that boss. He's not the boss.
She speaks English or only French? That's
because she's got three languages, obviously. These are two.
Oh my God. You didn't tell me she was two.
Yeah.
Wow. I thought you were talking about a 5-year-old. Yeah, she's two. So can I know her, David? How many do you have?
Oh, what's up?
Our children are the greatest.
Oh, we skipped one paragraph.
We're perhaps a little biased.
Go ahead. Oh, I could give you help.
David,
yes.
How many Kananara do you have?
So she was my thing.
You just had one more piece here. He mentions that he knew in his youth a young man who had a tremendous, intense, profound will to study Torah. His capabilities were somewhat limited, and he couldn't really understand. And I took him in to see the Pnei Menachem, who was still the Rosh Yeshiva, before he became the Rebbe. And the young man began to explain his problem. And within that context of discussion, he started breaking down and crying. And no one could control his crying. The Pnei Menachem put his hand on his shoulder, and he said to him, "I'm jealous of you. I was born with capabilities. With talents, and anything that I studied, I remembered. I didn't have that yigiyah b'torah, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to have yigiyah b'torah. You will be able to work hard every moment of your life in order to achieve Torah, and I am jealous of you." This young man had tremendous she'ifot, you know, tremendous aspirations. And he got a tremendous amount of chizuk from the Pnei Menachem, and as a result of his iron will and his asmada, he achieved great things, and it was a surprise to everyone. But again, this is tznuim chachma, this ameus b'torah. We are quick and rash in judging people's capacity in Torah by their natural inborn inheritance and intelligence, and that's not it. And therefore, Kol HaKavod to Tirza for being Makeres Es Makoma, but she has tremendous potential to reach great heights.